दावा कुंजा हारे जया गोपीनावा Gopinanabalaba Girivaranari Jasonanandana Rajajanarayana Jasananana Rajajanarayana Jamunachera Manachari Jamunachera Manachari Jaya Randa Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Gopinjana Valava Girivaranari Jasonanandana Rajajanarayana Jasonanandana Rajajanarayana Jamunachera Manachari Jamunachera Manachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Namadava Kunjabi Hari
Prabhupada's Granta Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Sri Sri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani Ki Jai. Sri Sri Gornitai Ki Jai. Sri Sri Kishore Kishori Ki Jai. Sri Sri Radha Damodar Ki Jai. Sri Hari Nam Sankirtan Ki Jai. Gaur Premanandi. Glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Hare Krishna Mahamantra Ki Jai. So every day we're trying to discuss how we can improve our Krishna consciousness. And improving our Krishna consciousness may be approached from different categories, or angles. But I think one of the most and most foremost is how to improve our chanting. How to develop a taste for chanting. One of the ways we can, we were talking about the basic principles of getting the taste or applying certain practical principles that may be very helpful in how to approach the holy name, such as hearing the first Hare, and also, what else were we talking about? The importance of not trying to finish your rounds, but trying to chant in such a way that you can attract the attention of Krishna. If we try to simply finish our rounds without thinking about what are we doing, actually, what are we actually doing, we're trying to offer our love to Krishna in the form of chanting. Chanting is an expression of devotion within the heart. It's not just a function that we go through every day because we were told to chant. Sometimes we can fall into the mechanics of bhakti and not understand the essence. If we simply apply the mechanics without the essence, we will be very ritualistic in the way we do things. And it becomes just like a function. It's more like a duty rather than an expression of joy. Because bhakti is joyful. It's a platform of awakening the joy within the heart. So everything should be done in that mood. And one of the ways to access more mercy through the chanting is the importance of serving Vaishnavas. Because Vaishnava Seva ranks very much high on the platform of importance in our Krishna consciousness. Vaishnava Seva means to serve Krishna. Really, because in order to serve Krishna, we have to serve Krishna through serving his devotees. Now, there are some who may interpret Vaishnava Seva in a very limited way, and that means service to the spiritual master, or service to those who are, what we say, considered to be seen as advanced in devotional service. That's a very limited and very, what we say, what's the better word? Not only limited, but very narrow-minded way of approaching Vaishnava Seva. A Vaishnava sees everyone as an object of service. How can I serve this person? And therefore, with that mood, also comes the mercy of the Lord. So, in this material world, service to each other goes on as service to myself. What can I get out of serving you? That's material. It's, you find that in relationships everywhere, that one will not enter into a relationship if there's nothing in it for me. Ultimately, in bhakti, what's in it for you is that you get love of God. But the act itself may sometimes cause you difficulty. In other words, to serve others may be a hardship. Mental, physical, and so many other ways are hardship. Maybe difficult. maybe even cost you some time, energy, maybe even your health. But beyond that, the reward is that one starts to awaken love of God. So on the platform of what's in it for me is love of God. But one doesn't even think in that way. One thinks that to serve Vaishnavas is my happiness. To make friends with devotees is my happiness. To see other persons' interests as more important than my own interest is Vaishnav culture, actually. It sounds very revolutionary. But actually, that's true. That's how Krishna consciousness works. Because we have placed that principle in Krishna, but we also place that principle in everything related to Krishna. So that helps us to develop the proper mood of service, because the devotee is always in a mood of service or trying to serve. So trying to serve may be expressed in different ways according to the situation and the person. So how can I serve devotees? Or what can I do to serve the devotees like that? A person should always think. The me principle also becomes fulfilled when the me principle is focused on others. That's the key to life, actually. Even in the material world, that works too. When everyone sees someone else as being more important, the fulfillment of one's own desires or one's own needs become also found in that fulfillment. Why is that? Because happiness is an expression of devotion, and to offer devotion, time, energy, service to others is the nature of the living entity. So that's fulfillment. That's why sacrifice actually becomes joyful at one point. Then it's no longer sacrifice, it's actually happiness. In the beginning, it may be sacrifice or austerity, difficulty. But after a while, it becomes a way of life. So this is a more of an extended or more direct way to increase the quality of our chanting. Because when Krishna sees that one is becoming more and more in the mood of a servant, he's more and more inclined to give his, what we say, sweet mercy. So he's always thinking, how can I serve? Or always in the mood of service. That's it. So serving Vaishnavas, serving the Lord, like that, serving the holy name, serving prasadam. When we serve prasadam, we take prasadam. Taking prasadam is serving prasadam. Serving means sometimes we think, can you serve prasadam? But also honoring prasadam in the mood that this is Krishna coming in the form of prasadam is actually serving prasadam. We're serving Krishna in the mood by honoring his mercy, by accepting what he gives us in terms of foodstuffs. So that's also another mood of service. So this is called Krishna consciousness or Vaishnav conscious devotional mood like that. It takes time to develop that. Two things are fundamental to coming to that stage. One is practice, and the other one is purification of the heart. Purification of the heart and practice may also be parallel to each other, in the sense that practice will help to purify the heart, but the heart really becomes purified by hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. There's where the heart becomes purified fast. Satam prasangam mama virya sambido bhavanti hitkarna rasayanikata najoshita tad tarvartmani bhaktir ritir commission. I can't remember the last line. Kamishyati. Huh? Anukramishyati, yeah. 3:25:25. Question on the holy name, yes. Service, yeah. In the material world, it's the opposite. We see each other as an object of enjoyment. What can I get from you?
Hare Krishna. You could have the right consciousness in both situations. I want to help bring this person back to Godhead for the pleasure of my Guru Maharaj, for instance. But that as opposed to say, you know...
You're saying one is easier than the other?
Not necessarily, but just that one would be appreciated by Krishna more, and I'm wondering...
No, that's not true. Krishna, not that Krishna is going to appreciate one more than another. He's appreciating your mood of service. That's what he's seeing. He's not seeing what you're doing so much. He's seeing what is your mood.
But isn't it the who too? Because there's like certain, because he says everyone approaches him and he's equal to all. So if I was to serve you as opposed to, you know, someone that's completely covered over, he'd be more pleased if I served you, no?
Well, we might look at it this way. Don't use me as an example. Say Prabhupada. Yeah, there's a verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam which says, here's the connection. Here's the connection. Shushusha Sharadanasya Vasudeva Kataruchi Sanmayad Seva Vipra Purnya Tirtana Sevana. By rendering service to great souls, great service is done. And by such service, one gets an affinity to hear the message of Vasudeva. So by serving great souls, such as Srila Prabhupada or a pure devotee, then we awaken within our consciousness the desire to hear the glories of the Lord. So that's a direct statement by Sutta Goswami. But then again, what is the spiritual master asking from us? He's asking us, go out and preach. So when you're preaching, you're also serving the great souls, because that's their request. So many times we might find, yes, there is direct service to the great souls, but what are the great souls really asking us to do? You know, go out and distribute books, preach, and do these things. So they may be more pleased with us going out on the streets and doing that than personal service to themselves. But Krishna will be pleased by running personal service to them. So you may say the spiritual master's pleasure and Krishna's pleasure may be seen a little bit different in this context, because Krishna loves his pure devotee and anyone who serves his pure devotee. But then again, serving his instructions is also serving him too. Okay, thank you. Nice point. Okay, any questions on japa? Everyone's japa's getting better? No? Yes? Is everybody chanting japa? Yeah. Oh, okay. I was just waiting for some kind of response here. Well, how many of you are not chanting? Okay. That's good. All right. So, yeah. The holy name. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Canto 4, Chapter 31, chapters entitled Narada Instructs the Pachetas, text number 9. Narada Uvacha Tajjamantani Karmanihi Tara Ayushtan Manovachaha Tan Ayushtan Mano vachaha Nirnam yena hi vishvatma Sevate hari vishva ishvaraha Nara uvacha Tadjamatani karmani tadayustan manovachaha nirnam yena hi vishvatmaha sevate harir ishvaraha. Narada uvacha tajjanma tani karmani tarayustan manovachaha nirnamyena hi vishvatmaha sevate harir ishvaraha. Ladies. Narada uvacha. Narada said, tat janma, that birth, tani, those, karmani, fruit of activities, tat, that, ayu, span of life, tat, that, mana, mind, vacha, words, nirnam, of human beings, yena, by which, he, certainly, vishva atma, the supersoul, sevate, is served, harihi, the supreme personality of Godhead, ishvaraha, the supreme controller. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The great sage Narada said, when a living entity is born to engage, I'll try that again. When a living entity is born to engage in devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supreme Controller, his birth, all his fruit of activities, his lifespan, his mind, and his words are all factually perfect. Purport. A little lengthy, please listen up. In this verse, the word nirnam is very important. There are many other births besides human birth, but Narada Muni is here and especially speaking of human birth. Among human beings, there are different types of men. Of these, those who are advanced in spiritual consciousness or Krishna consciousness are called Aryans. Among Aryans, one who engages in devotional service of the Lord is most successful. The word nirnam indicates that lower animals are not expected to engage in devotional service of the Lord. But in perfect human society, everyone should engage in a devotional service of the Lord. It does not matter whether one is born poor or rich, black or white. There may be so many material distinctions for one who takes birth in human society, but everyone should engage in the Lord's devotional service. At the present moment, civilized nations have given up God consciousness for economic development. They are no longer actually interested in advancing in God consciousness. Formerly, their forefathers were engaged in executing religious principle. Whether one is a Hindu, Muslim, Buddhist, Jewish, or whatever, everyone has some religious institution. Real religion, however, means becoming God conscious. It is particularly mentioned herein that birth is successful if an interest in Krishna consciousness is taken. Activity is successful if it results in serving the Lord. Philosophical speculation or mental speculation is successful when engaged in understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The senses are worth possessing when engaged in the service of the Lord. Actually, devotional service means engaging the senses in the service of the Lord. At the present moment, our senses are not purified. Therefore, our senses are engaged in the service of society, friendship, love, politics, sociology, and so on. However, when the senses are engaged in the service of the Lord, one attains bhakti or devotional service. In the next verse, these matters will be more clearly explained. When one great devotee of Lord Chaitanya saw the Lord, he said that all his desires were fulfilled. He said, "Today everything is auspicious. Today my birthplace, neighborhood are completely glorified. Today my senses, from my eyes down to my toes, are fortunate. Today my life is successful because I've been able to see your lotus feet that are worshipped by the goddess of fortune." Om Agyan Timirandasya Gina Jana Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobistam Staptitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadanti Swam Padantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaur Bhaktarindam Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So, Narada Muni's responding, and he's making a nice distinction here, that there's so many kinds of births, and the Padma Purana, it describes that there are 8,400,000 species of life. The scriptures give an exact number of how many different types of species of life. Categories of the species are about five. There are aquatics. There are plants, trees, and creepers. There are insects and reptiles. There are birds. There are beasts. And there are human forms. And they give an exact number of how many different types of species within each category. 900,000. Aquatics, 1 million birds, 1,000, 1 million, 1,100,000, trees, plants, creepers, like that, reptiles, 2 million four-legged animals, and 400,000 species of human forms. Now, we might ask, how many of you seen a small portion of these, even a small portion we haven't seen. So this is the Shastras. You know, if you go to different places on this planet, you'll see insects, birds, creepers, trees, animals you'd never see in this area of the world, and vice versa, like that. But then again, if you go on other planets in the universe, you'll see species that don't exist on this planet. Just like it says there's 400,000 forms of human life. Wow. You know, we just think of, well, there's five races. But then again, there is different Kirata Hunam Palinda Pukasaram Birasamba Yavana Kashadaya. These are different types of cultural manifestations within the different races. You know, Chinese, this and that. This particular species, that. And so there's not that there is complete distinction between the different nationalities, but there are certain, just like there's Asians, there's the Europeans, there's the Africans, there's like that. So there's different, these are considered different species. But if you go on other planets, you'll find that there are human forms that are lower, or might we say more, less intelligent. And you go on other places, you'll find that they're super high beings who have great intelligence and great abilities. 8,400,000 species of life, not 8,400,001. So this is the Shastras. They give exact understanding. So to take birth in human form is really the smallest number of living beings. The beast, there's 300,000 forms of four-legged animals in different planets in different places. Birds, there's 1 million different kinds of birds. That's good news for the bird watchers, right? People like to see the different species of birds, you know. I have one devotee friend that lives in Minneapolis. He's a bird watcher. I'll sit in his yard with him, and he'll see the different birds, and he'll get so excited and tell me all about this color bird and that color bird and what that bird does. And you know, I'm interested because he's interested, but really I'm not so interested. So, you know, there's so many different species of different categories of species, different species within the categories. So what this verse is saying is to get a human form of life is not a cheap thing. It's pretty rare. So sometimes we take it for granted, yeah, I'm a human being. But we don't really know the whole picture. To get a human form of life is rare, extremely rare. Because most of the living entities are in small, lower species of life. And we've also been in lower species of life. Our particular self, our soul, has been through thousands and millions of other species. We can't remember that. You know, we might have been stepped on by somebody as a bug, you know, poom, squash. Sometimes you feel like you're being squashed. Well, maybe you were one time. So we don't remember, because in these other forms, there's just no recollection. Or even past human forms of life, we can't remember who we were or what we did. But the Shastras explain we've been through all these different species. Now to come to human form of life, that is called very, very fortunate. And to become into an advanced form of life, just like if you take birth in India, that is considered such a high birth and such a rare birth that even the demigods, or birth in the higher planets and the devas, are considered to be a lower birth than taking birth in India. According to the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, you read that. To take birth in India is very, very fortunate, very, very rare. So that means one has performed pious activities for so many lives, and maybe even devotional service for so many lives, to get that birth in India. Well, we say India, why? Because that's what's left of the Vedic culture. if we have to designate a part of the world where the Vedic culture is still somewhat active or still flourishing in some areas of it, it's India. But the whole world used to be what we say under the Vedic culture at one time. You can, if you study carefully the other cultures, you'll find etymological words, the root words, are connected to the Sanskrit. You'll find towns that are similar. Like I travel in Europe, and there's names of towns that are practically have the same Vedic name as the words in the Vedic culture. There's a town where someone lives, it's called Rada. It's in Czechoslovakia. Czech. It's in Czech. A place called Radha. So all these European cultures, you know, were under the Vedic culture at one time, like that. So to take birth in a human form of life and to take birth in a advanced human form of life is very, very, extremely rare. Extremely rare. And to get an opportunity to engage in devotional service, because how many people who even have good births in this material world actually take up devotional service? So to come to the platform of devotional service is so rare that Srila Prabhupada gave an example of how to understand this rarity. And what did he say? He said there's a vast ocean, and somewhere in that ocean there's a frog. And somewhere in that ocean there's a log floating on the ocean. And in that log there's a hole. Now the frog decides to surface, and he somehow just happens to come up through that hole in the log. First attempt for surfacing. He said that's how rare it is to get an opportunity to engage in pure devotional service. What to speak of a human birth, that's even rare. That's rare. But to take up devotional service is even rarer. So therefore, it's important to see well how far we've actually come in transmigrating from species to species, life after life, and different species. Karana guna sangoso sadasa jona janmasu. That is mentioned in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, verse number 22, I believe it is, where Krishna says that, you know, you take birth sometimes in a higher planet, sometimes in a lower, sometimes in this species, sometimes in that species, up and down. He says it's called samsara, the cycle of birth, death, disease, and old age. And he compares it to a merry-go-round, where a merry-go-round is going round and round, but at the same time there's little horses on it and it's going up and down. So someone who's sitting on the horse is going round and round and up and down same time. So we're going round and round, birth, death, disease, and old age. We're going up and down, sometimes higher planet, sometimes lower, sometimes this planet, sometimes this species. Back and forth. Thousands, millions of lifetimes we've been in this material world. Millions. Can't even count it. So to come to this stage of able to practice pure devotional service, how rare it is and how fortunate one is to get that opportunity. And therefore, Narada Muni is saying this word, nirnam, means human birth. So human birth is considered to be a great benediction. And to engage in devotional service or to have the opportunity is the benediction of that benediction. And therefore, one should see that all of my struggles in previous births have led me to this point. I've been looking for happiness. I've been looking for, what we say, satisfaction. And through many thousands of species of life, because you even you study the animals, they have feelings too. They have families too. They defend themselves too. They eat also. So you see that in the animals and sometimes in even lower species, the birds and others. They also have the same characteristics that the human being has as far as the needs of the body and the needs of the mind in some cases. So we've been doing that. Life after life after life after life, we've been just somehow or other trying to find happiness in whatever body we got. Because whatever body you got, you can't change that. You can't say, well, I'll trade this body in for another. You have to wait till this one's finished. Then you can get another one. But in the meantime, you got this body. So every time we get a new body, it's simply another page of our sojourn, the word sojourn, in this material world. But now, the human form of life is so rare. Prahlad Maharaj explains this in the Srimad Bhagavatam when he's talking to his friends. Durlabha manasa janma. How rare this human form of body is. So rare. Don't waste it. He's talking to his friends who are his schoolmates. They're 5 years old. And he's also 5 years old. And he's telling them, you know, why don't you become Krishna conscious? Take up Krishna consciousness now. And they're saying, Prahlad, yeah, you know, what we understand is that's a good idea. But we're children. And we want to play. And we want to do so many things that children like to do. And he says, you know, well, that's nice, but you don't know how long you're going to be in this body. You could leave this body tomorrow. Who says you're going to live a long life? Is there any guarantee that tomorrow will come? Prabhupada used to challenge us this that way and say to us, is there anybody here can guarantee that they're going to be alive tomorrow? Can you actually guarantee that? We don't know. So even having a human form of life and being in devotional service means to take advantage of the time that's available to practice Krishna consciousness. Because the most valuable thing that we have, aside from the human form of life, that's very valuable, is time. It's not the wealth that we can accumulate or the relationships that we can have in this material world, because they're fleeting and they come and go. But the time is so valuable that everyone has. It says that when you take birth in this material world, in this particular form as a human being, you have so many breaths. You have so many breaths. And you have to, as time goes on, your life is becoming shorter. And Prabhupada used to do, he was in Johannesburg, or was Durban, South Africa, I forget, one of the two places. And he was making this point, and he said to one man, how old are you? What is your age? What is your age? We don't say, how old are you? That's not a term we use. We say, what is your age? And the man said, I'm 22 years old. And Prabhupada said, you're 22 years dead. That's what it means. That means 22 of your years of your life is gone. So you have expired that much, and whatever is the balance, that's the rest of your life. So we like to think, well, I'm this old. When you're young, you want to get old. And when you're old, you want to be young. Because you're thinking it's better on the other side. The old people are thinking the youth have it, and the youth are thinking that, you know, I need to be older so I can kind of like do what I want to do without anybody telling me what to do. So, you know, it's like that. And, you know, so we kind of look at life on the other side. It's always better with somebody else's situation. My situation is not. It's just the matter of just getting into a different situation, that's all. But here Narada Muni is saying, what is the success in human life? The success in human life is to engage in devotional service. And Prabhupada makes the point that any activity that we use in serving the Lord becomes auspicious. Whether it's philosophical speculation, whether it's using our intelligence, whether it's engaging our senses. He says friendship, society, love, politics, sociology, all political activities, all these things when engaged in the service of the Lord reach their perfection. They actually are, the quality of these categories reaches its perfection when it's engaged in the service of the Lord. Why? Because the fundamental principle of existence is that God is everything. Sometimes we think, well, yeah, devotional service, but there's so many other things to do. But everything else is owned and controlled by the Lord also. Not only devotional, it's not, devotional service is the path to the Lord, but there's other activities in this material world that are not independent of God. Nothing is independent of God. In fact, there's nothing independent of God. Even material activities are under the control of the Lord through the agency of material energy. It's just less direct. It's like being under the control of the state while being in the prison house, as opposed to being under the control of the state as being a free citizen. Both are being managed by the state. So there's nothing outside of God. Therefore, when we speak of life, we speak of Krishna. Krishna means life, and without Krishna, there's no life. It's just a shadow reflection of reality when the living entity somehow or other neglects or somehow disregards their relationship with the Lord and thinks they can find happiness in other activities that are separate from the Lord. But whatever your activity is, as is mentioned here, if it's engaged in the service of the Lord, it's also a source of happiness, and it's a source of spiritual advancement too, whether it's politics, sociology, or anything other than sinful activities, of course. So this verse is very fundamental in explaining that human life is rare, but rarer yet is devotional service. So how fortunate it is for one to come to devotional service, and therefore to use your time in the best possible way to progress in devotional service, that person is called Vidvan. Vidvan means one who is actually fortunate. Bhagyavan. Bhagyavan means fortunate. Vidvan means one who understands the goal of life. So that, and the goal of life is happiness, right? The goal of life and happiness are synonymous, whereas activities in this world and happiness are not synonymous. Although we try for happiness in this world through various activities, there's no guarantee happiness will come, nor that when we get what we get, what we look for, through these activities, when there's no guarantee we're going to be happy by it. Nor will it last, even if we do get some satisfaction. That's the nature of material. Material's always changing. You get mad, there's a song in Bengal. I got some money, and I built myself a nice house, and then the house burned down. So the point was, yeah, I worked so hard to find happiness by having a house, but what happened? The house burned down. Where's my happiness? So that's material life. And you can apply that principle to everything you do, because material life simply ends in disappointment, whatever it is. So ultimately, one has to see how fortunate I am to come in contact with Srila Prabhupada, with the process of pure devotional service. Because now I can fulfill all my desires perfectly and completely. I can find satisfaction in all activities of life and ultimately awaken that eternal happiness that is so much embedded within my existence, but still is not experienced. We have a hidden treasure. Everyone has a hidden treasure. But of course, we all know that we have a treasure. Maybe it's not so hidden anymore. But the treasure is an unlimited treasure. It's not just a few coins or some counterfeit bills. It's real. The real treasure is full knowledge, full satisfaction. And that's devotional service. So here, then Prabhupada ends with a little anecdote. And he says that there was one great devotee When he met Lord Chaitanya, he said, "My whole life has become auspicious. My birth, my family, my neighborhood, everything, my senses, my eyes, down to my toes are fortunate. Why? Because I have come in contact with your lotus feet, which are worshipped by the goddess of fortune." Is that something? That's also saying something. If you have the lotus feet of the Lord, you also have the goddess of fortune. Goddess of fortune means material auspiciousness, wealth, fame. These are all parts of the treasures or the gifts of the goddess of fortune. She gives that automatically to those who take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. So we might say, well, I haven't seen Lord Chaitanya or Krishna, but Lord Chaitanya is there. So is Krishna, so is Radharani, so is Jagannath, Baladev, Subhadra, Nityananda. They're all there. But and they're making their lotus feet available through the process of surrender and devotional service. So we're fortunate, but we have to, just like Hanuman didn't really know that he had so many abilities because he was cursed as a little boy to forget them, because he was using all his powers in the wrong way. So someone had to tell him, "Hey Hanuman, you can do this. Hey Hanuman, you're able to do this." And he would say, "Oh yes, that's right." And then he would do it. So that's our situation also. We have to be reminded, hey, you're fortunate. There's nothing else you have to strive for in life. Just strive for devotional service. And if you strive for devotional service, taktva deham purna janmani naiti mameti sorja, everything in life will be automatically added onto you completely and perfectly through the process of devotional service by Krishna's arrangement. When Krishna is pleased with his devotees, he fulfills all the devotees' desires perfectly and beyond their imagination. So this is the process of devotional service. We're coming back to, they say, sometimes they say, welcome home, right? Welcome home. We're coming back to where our real home is. The home is the heart, and the heart is the place where devotion sits. Okay, so questions. Human form of life. Acharya Nishta.
I had two questions, Maharaj. As far as our cycle in the material existence and samsara, I don't know if you want to get into
this. It's not, we don't want to make it too far.
I don't know if you want to get into this question, but my understanding is that the living entity originally, as he falls down, occupies the post of Lord Brahma.
Sometimes it says that, yeah.
So then I would curse, is it from that position that he then enters the lowest species of life?
Yeah, the lowest species are the aquatics. Higher than the aquatics are the insects and creepers and trees. And higher than that are the birds, and higher than that are the beasts, and higher than that are the humans.
So
it says you fall down to Brahma, and then you go down from there.
Thank you. Someone once asked me on Sankirtan that if we see such evolved consciousness in some aquatics like dolphins and whales, how is it that that is considered a lower form and that, you know, compared to insects or plants?
Even within the species, there are different types of, just like you see given different levels of intelligence in each of the species. So within the fish species, there's fishes that are more intelligent than other fishes, such as the dolphins. They're very compassionate animals. They save people's lives sometimes. There's stories of dolphins saving people's lives. So yeah, but the soul is there. You have to remember the soul is in every species of life. And the soul is powerful. So in some species, within the species, they're the best of that species.
Thank you. My next question was, given that there are so many unlimited numbers of living entities wandering throughout the universe, sometimes that can, or I've heard an argument that it seems to diminish the value of like preaching work. Like, well, you can try to save maybe a few jivas, but ultimately the universe will always be filled up. It's an eternal.
If you can save one person, Krishna will save you. That's how much he loves each and every living entity. If you can help one person go back to Godhead, Krishna will reward you unlimitedly for that. We don't understand God's love. God's love is perfect and all-powerful, just like any aspect of God, and his love is also perfect. So he doesn't like to see the living entity suffer. So if you relieve a suffering of some living entity, how dear you become to God. Even if it's only one person in your whole life, if you somehow help. It says, if you somehow or other bring one person back to Godhead, even if you're not qualified to go back to Godhead, you will go.
What does that mean, to bring one person back to God?
That means somehow or other you've been fortunate enough to be instrumental to bring that person to back to Godhead. You put them on the path, or you help them on the path, or by your association, by your preaching, they actually attained God consciousness. And it must be other ways also. This is not a cheap movement. It's not cheap at all. You're dealing with the absolute truth in all its power. It's not just another religious movement in this world. It's Krishna's, Lord Chaitanya. Why would God come personally? He doesn't have to come to this world. But that's how much he wants to bring the suffering living entities back, so he makes personal appearance in this world. And for God to come to this world, it's a botheration. It's not a nice place. But he comes out of compassion. He comes out of complete mercy. Why? To uplift the souls. So if you're assisting him in his work, how dear do you become to him? Prabhupada said that. You're assisting God in doing his work. And that's the work of the spiritual master also. So it's not a small thing. Not at all.
Thank you, Maharaj. One other question I just had.
So don't go back to Maya. Okay?
Yes.
Promise? Maharaj. You promise.
I'll try my best, Maharaj.
Okay. That's a good answer. We never know, because as you go on in devotional life, if you don't make advancement, you will fall away. You have to make advancement. If you don't, if you're not moving forward, at one point, if you try to stay in one place, you'll start going back to your old ways and take up material life again. So that's the process. It's always moving forward or moving backward, one way or the other. So if we're endeavoring to move forward, we'll move forward. If we're just complacent, then the modes of material energy will push us backwards towards our own old ways again. Yes? Mm-hmm. What's your name?
My name's Mark Maharaj.
Mark? Thank you.
Hare Krishna. What if we're not making advancement, or we don't feel like we're making advancement? In my own experience, I have these ebb and flows in my spiritual life. Sometimes I really feel like my chanting is working. I feel different realizations from Krishna. I will read the Bhagavad Gita, a certain Bhagavad Gita verse, and I won't get anything from it for maybe years. And then all of a sudden, one day, wow, so that's what that means.
Yeah.
So what do we do on these plateaus that we come to? How can we... Where sometimes you just feel like giving up, like this is just...
Well, advancement's not always... It's not always understood by how we feel or the realizations we get. The advancement is that you're somehow or other every day engaged in devotional service. You're making an effort to practice. You're making an effort to serve. You're making an effort to purify your life. If you're doing that, you're making advancement. You'll see. I mean, don't do this. But if you stop one day, you'll see the difference. If you stop 2 days, you'll really notice this difference. And if you stop 3 days, you'll feel like, oh my God. So we're actually making advancement as long as we keep trying from day to day. And realizations come by the grace of the Lord. We get these realizations. Realizations are called special mercy. Mercy comes in the form of the process and the opportunity to engage in the process. That's mercy. Special mercy is that when you get some realization about what you read or something about your activities in devotional service, like that. Those things are rare. They don't come all the time. But the most important thing in the process of devotional service is faith. Faith is the basis for everything we do. And we should strengthen our faith by hearing and chanting and associating with devotees. Then our faith becomes stronger. Like that. So you may be getting these realizations or you may not. Sometimes you may go on for a while and then all of a sudden something comes. It doesn't mean in between you are not making advancement. But it's described like this. If you really want to understand how to make advancement, then please note this, that you have to see, where am I in my practice? Where do I have to go from here? Bhaktivinoda Thakur says we have to understand what platform we're on and how to strive to the higher platform. Okay, what is the higher platforms? There are 9 steps. The 9 steps are Adaustrada, Sarusanga, Bhajana Kriya, Anarti Nivritti, Nishta, Ruchi, Ashakti, Bhava, and Prema. So these are the 9 stages. So the first stage is faith. Faith brings you into association of devotees. That's the second stage. Through association of devotees, you take up the process, you chant, you read, you serve. And then after some time, you take shelter of a spiritual master and you get initiated. That's Bhajana Kriya. That's the third stage. And then from the third stage, Anartha Nivritti. That means unwanted things in your life start to go. And when gradually, when 75% of the unwanted things in your life go, you come to the stage of Nishta. Nishta means steadiness. You're steady in your activities of devotional service. And then through steadiness, and when that matures, you finally come to the stage of Ruchi. Ruchi means you feel happy all the time. You're always happy in devotional service. It's an internal feeling. It may manifest itself externally or may not be. You're feeling satisfied, happiness. And then from there, through Ruchi, you start to becoming attached to Krishna. You just want to serve Krishna. You want to hear about Krishna. You don't want to waste a moment of time doing anything else. And then you come to the stage of bhava. Bhava means you develop natural loving affection for Krishna. Your feelings of emotion flow towards Krishna naturally. And then when that becomes mature, you actually develop love for God. And on the bhava stage, there's 6 different levels of bhava. And on the prema stage, there's 8 different stages of prema, all the way up to Mahabhagavat, which is the stage of Lord Chaitanya and Radharani. So this is a very scientific process of reawakening the soul's relationship with God. So we have to see, where am I? And where's my next step? And how to achieve that step, like that. And then you'll make advancement, like that, yes. So that takes a little introspection and also maybe some advice from others also.
Maharaj, this is just referring to having a rain check in terms of where you are and where you need to strive to. And my understanding is that most of the time we hang around in that anatta nivritti stage, right? So many times
you get stuck there, yeah.
So my question is, how do we do a rain check in that stage? Because what happens is, you may think that you have an anartha which you've overcome, but then you realize more anarthas come.
Okay, do you know what the anarthas are? There's 16 anarthas. Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Bhajana Rahasya lists the 16 anarthas. There's four categories of four. So these are things you got to work on. One is philosophical misconceptions. Two is anarthas caused by pious activities. Watch out. Anarthas caused by impious activities. And the last one is offenses. So these are the four categories. And each of the four categories, there are four anarthas. So there's 16 anarthas. And the anarthas are destroyed on different stages of one's practice, like that. The philosophical deviations are destroyed on the platform of Bhajana Kriya. The pious and impious activities are destroyed on the platform of Ruchi. And on the platform of Prema, no, not even Prema, offenses are not destroyed until one sees Krishna face to face. They're the hardest ones to get rid of, the offenses. Offenses can still be committed on the platform of love of God. We have the example Jayan Vijay. So the point is that know where you are, know what the anarthas you have to work on, and then work on those. And then also, you know, engage in devotional service. Because if you don't consciously try to eliminate the anarthas, you'll get stuck. And you'll stay in one platform for years, and maybe sometimes you'll go down to the lower platform, and then you'll come back up to where you were, and you'll go down again. You won't really make any progress. So how do you tell you're making progress? When you get to Nishta. Nishta means I'm steady. I'm steady in my chanting, I'm steady in my service, I'm steady in my, what else? Yeah, service and chanting, the most two things. I'm steady. Steady means every day, regulated. I'm steady in reading, I'm steady like that. Reading may change, but at least I'm steady in my service and I'm steady in my chanting. These two things are features of Nishta.
So much things like pride, envy, ego, anger, greed, lust, they all come in that first category?
No, they come in the category of impious activities. There are four sinful activities, which are called anarthas. The four are accepting things that cannot be used in devotional service. In other words, attachment to the temporary that is sinful. Two is the desire for fame, pratishtha. Three is fault finding and criticizing, and the duplicitous diplomatic mood. Diplomacy and fault finding. And the last one is envy. These four are the sinful activities. The pious activities are anarthas that come by way of liberation, anarthas that come by way of mystic power, anarthas that come by way of desire for the heavenly planets, and anarthas that come by way of attachment to material things, sense gratification. I just like to eat chocolate. I can't give it up. That's a kind of sense attachment to a type of sense gratification. Or like that. Attachment to and the impious activities, you know, I smoke cigarettes, I can't give it up. So you have to work on that. These things, you work on them. Like that. Chaitendriya. Then there's four kinds of offenses and four kinds of philosophical deviations.
The 16 anarthas, is that in the Nectar Devotion?
No. They're mentioned in different ways, but they're categorized and explained in Bhajana Rahasya by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and also mentioned in Madhurya Kandambini by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur.
And then the Bhakta Loka book is the six things favorable and the six things unfavorable.
Unfavorable, yeah.
Another thing is, I was reading one of the purports, Srila Prabhupada said that...
they're also in art, there's those six things unfavorable.
Yeah, what we're doing with by avoiding Krishna consciousness is we're just increasing the pages of human history, human misery. And Brigitte Bardot is 78 years old, Maharaj.
70?
78.
Oh, thank you very much. I really needed to know that. Thank you. Okay, so next.
Krishna Maharaj. One devotee I heard mentioned that on the platform of Nishta, one is like Brahma Bhuta. No, sorry. What is that? Brahma Bhuta Kalpate. He attains the level of Brahman.
Brahma Bhuta Prasanatman Nasoshati. That's the platform of Ruchi. Okay. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatman Nasoshati Nakankshati Samasarveshu Bhuteshu Madbhakti Labhate Param. Samasarve Bhuteshu, he sees every living entity equal. Prasanmatma, he's joyful. He sees everyone equally and he's always joyful. And that's Ruchi, the state, it's a higher stage of Ruchi actually. Okay. Do you want to know what that verse, what platform that verse is mentioning? Is that what your question was? No? Yeah.
I was wondering, you know, I've heard this equal vision thing before, but then there's also persons who are more intimately connected to us, like the spiritual master and persons we have friendly dealings with, so there's affection. So I was just for a second had
there's a verse that talks about equal vision. You know the verse?
The Pandita Samadarshina?
Yeah. Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmani Gavi Hastani Suni Chaiva Swabhakecha Pandita Samadarshina. One who sees all living entities. They don't see the body, they see within the heart of all living entities, God's in there. They see the body too, but they treat everyone equally. They don't envy anyone, nor do they try to take advantage of anyone. They see God's in the heart, they see the soul in the heart. And if you don't see people like that, still treat them like that. If you're treating them like that way, then you'll also start to see like that. Treat everyone equally. How do you treat everyone equally? Treat everyone with respect. That's the basic principle. Give respects to everyone. According how best you can respect that. We talked about that the other day, how Krishna reciprocated with different types of living entities according to what type of living entity he was respecting. He shook hands with some, he smiled at others, he gave sidelong glances to others, he embraced others, he paid obeisances to others. So he reciprocated with different living entities according to that living entity's position. So we also have to know our position and relationship to others. Yeah. That you have to learn. What is your relationship? But in general, just to give everyone respect. They say, you want to be respected? All right. You can't get respect if you don't give respect. Don't expect people to respect you if you're not respecting anybody else. Or if you have a limited amount of respect. What you want for yourself, you have to give to others. People say, nobody loves me. Well, try loving somebody and see what happens. If you want love, you got to give love. If you give love, you'll get love. Nobody loves me. Well, try loving. Nobody talks to me. Talk to somebody. what you want for yourself, you have to be that same image towards others, or else it's hypocrisy. It's artificial. That's all, right? It's obvious. What you want for yourself, you have to express that towards others, and then you'll get it also. If you're angry towards others, people will be angry with you. Yes. That's life.
But we, in the course of our different relationships with different persons, some we may be associating with more because they're more like-minded, or because of our services, or
yeah,
because they're living in the temple, or like this. So my kind of initial thought would be, oh, well, they're more, I like them more because I spend more time with them, or because I feel closer to them because we associate more. So is that...
That's okay, but it's not Krishna fully. That's not Krishna consciousness. That's just human nature.
Yeah.
Krishna consciousness means we don't make so much of a distinction by what we like or don't like. We make the distinction on what Krishna likes and doesn't like. Our distinction is based on what the spiritual master and Krishna want, not so much what we like and don't like. Because we can associate with someone if that's what Krishna wants us to do. And we can avoid someone if that's what Krishna wants us to do. I might want to associate with this person, but if Krishna doesn't want me to, then I won't do it. We put Krishna's likes before our own likes, and then that's Krishna conscious. But if Krishna doesn't say anything, then you can associate with whoever you want. If he doesn't say anything. But he tells you how to associate and how to choose your association so you can benefit from that association, and you can also benefit that other person. You might want to associate with a beautiful girl, but it may not be good for you.
Sorry, that was very helpful.
Okay, thank you. Anything else? Yes, Mark?
Yeah. Yeah, thank you, Maharaj. I'd like to go further on that. How do we know it's Krishna that's telling us these things and not just...
Yeah, you have to... If you don't know, then ask.
That's cool.
Well, look around. There's a few people you can ask.
Yeah, someone you can trust, I guess.
Yeah, right? Develop some relationship with devotees and then get some advice. Or if you can figure it out yourself, then that's also good. But if you think you figure it out and it doesn't work, then you realize maybe I need some advice. If it works, then okay. Virari, don't go. I got something for you. I have to give to you. Now you can go here. No, you just deposit that. Yeah, okay. Sorry about the business deal. But Murari's hard to find. Or maybe I'm hard to find. I don't know. So yeah, if you think this is right and you do it and it works, then okay. But if you do and it doesn't work, then maybe you think, oh, maybe I should get some advice. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Gave me a list earlier, all the way up to prema, I think it was. Is that right?
Offenses, yeah.
Before the offenses, the of advancement.
Yeah.
What is that list from, so I can look at that more? I forgot how many things it was.
The different stages, the nine stages.
Yeah.
It's mentioned in Nectar Devotion,
okay.
And it's a verse by Srila Rupa Goswami where he describes these nine stages. Jai Jagannath, Do you know where that verse is? It's in Nectar Devotion. Chapter 19, Nectar Devotion. He describes the nine stages, right? Mm-hmm. So look in chapter 19 of Nectar Devotion. You know, you're familiar with Nectar Devotion? Yeah. In there, there's those nine stages. Like that. Okay. Anything else? Yes, Gokulanandaji. Correct. If you have service, you have more responsibility. And responsibility makes you more serious about your chanting also. Yeah. That's natural. And they should try and find one. If you don't have a service you can put your heart in, then just ask, give me some service. That's all. But we don't want to serve. That's the problem. We don't want to serve. We want to do our own thing. If we wanted to serve, it's so easy. You just ask and you'll get service, right? Yes, TP? Yeah. You come to Nityananda Brahma Prabhu and say, can you give me some service? He's very, very resourceful. He'll give you something. Or he'll tell you how you can serve. He'll do something to help you. If you come to me, I'll give you something. I got a lot of service I need done. So, you know, it's not hard to find service. You can, if you stand in front of the deities and say, my dear Lord, please give me service, I can guarantee you that same day you'll get it. The same day. There was one girl, she was standing in front of Nrisingadev, and this, I mean, there's so many stories. She was looking at Nrisingadev. She was just a visitor. And in Mayapur, there's like hundreds of people in the temple at all times, mostly, during the functions, sometimes thousands. And she's standing there in front of Nrisingadev, and she's playing, my dear Lord, please give me some service. She finishes her prayer. She walks away. The pujari comes up to her and says, would you like to do some service? She's just thinking, my God, I just prayed for it, and it's coming already. So, yeah, Krishna knows. Krishna knows everything, and he can just say, hey, pujari, ask her. And the pujari says, all right, yeah. They want to do what? Yeah, I got that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can guarantee you, I'll guarantee you this, that if you, if your leader wants you to do this and you want to do something else, and you, and it's preaching, you'd say, my dear Lord, I really want to go out and preach. Please help me. And guarantee Krishna will come to you one day in the form of the leader and say, you know, maybe you should go out and preach. If you're sincere and you really want to do it as a service, you don't think Krishna's not going to fulfill that desire? But you have to show your sincerity by praying for it or by doing something to make it happen. Well, we work under the guidance of our leaders, right? We have to follow them. But if you have a service you want to do, keep it in your heart and pray for it. In due course of time, if Krishna wants you to do it, it'll happen. We want to do what Krishna wants to do. And the leaders want to do what Krishna wants to do. So they're trying to engage everyone in the best possible way. The question is sincerity. If you sincerely want to do something, sometimes you're not qualified to preach, and Krishna will say, just wait. Read some more books and practice preaching. It's like I started preaching in the van. I used to travel and do Sankirtan, and I would preach to the other person. It was two of us traveling in a van. I'd give class. That's how I started preaching. Because I couldn't preach to anybody else, and this person was with me. He had no choice to listen, you know. So I got a chance to preach, you know. So, like that. So, you know, practice preaching. And if you don't have anybody to preach to, just stand in front of the mirror and preach to yourself. And practice. In other words, to go out and preach, you want to be qualified or have some qualification to do it. Because you may go out there and get smashed, and then your devotional service may go down. So Krishna doesn't want that to happen. Nor does he want you to be out there when you can't really represent in the proper way. So sometimes you have to wait. Radhana Swami talks about that. You come into the temple and you're engaged in washing the utensils, but you're in your heart you're thinking, I want to be a preacher. All right, just keep washing the utensils. And then someday you'll come up to the standard of, and then you can go out and preach. It's not like you can just jump into that. Because preaching is, I was listening to him, Prabhupada, yes. Prabhupada said, preaching means learning the art to preach. You can blow people away where they don't want to come back ever again by your preaching. If you do that, then what's the use of your preaching? Or you can blow yourself away by going out there and thinking you can preach, and then you start looking into the shops and you're not really preaching. You're preaching to your, you know, to your desire for material enjoyment. So, yeah, Krishna may make you wait, he will, until you're ready to do it. Okay? You're not convinced. What do we need to say to answer your question? What's the answer to your question? It's okay? If you want to go out and preach for your own sense gratification, then you may not get it. But if you want to preach as a service, I'm sure you'll get it. Even if you want to go out and preach for your own sense gratification, you may get it. That's may happen, because when you're out there, Krishna might just purify you of that desire, and then you can actually come up to the standard. But do it if you want to really do something for Prabhupada or for your spiritual master, do it as a service. And the best way is to find out what pleases them and ask to do that. Ask the temple president, ask the spiritual master, how can I serve? Yeah. That's nice. If somebody tells you, do this, whew, you're lucky. You are lucky. You're fortunate. If you have to figure it out yourself, it's a problem. Okay. I was thinking that class would end at 8:45, but it didn't, so it's 9:30 now. Anyway, nice discussion. These things are important. And when we know what we're doing, why we're doing what we're doing, then we can make advancement in spiritual life. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.